Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 20th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Alan Akiyama and Charlene Miller will be here to highlight the upcoming Seward's Day Pancake Breakfast. We'll get the details about Panhandle Produce. And musician Annie Bartholomew will preview her concert at Kindred Post on Friday. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here live and local on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 37 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. Norway's second largest pension fund is divesting from companies behind the Dakota Access Pipeline after pressure from Norway's indigenous Sami people. NPR reports that the fund has decided to sell its shares worth nearly $60 million from four companies, including Energy Transfer Partners, which is building the Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. The Norwegian fund, in a statement last week, said it was no longer investing in the energy companies because of a, quote, unacceptable risk of contributing to serious or systematic human rights violations. The Guardian reports the Sami, sometimes called Lapps, have a history of protesting against mining operations and mineral resource prospecting on their land. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says it will pay out more than $90,000 in reimbursements in Colorado related to the 2015 Gold King mine spill. Most of the money will go to pay back local municipalities, with just over $800 going to the Southern Ute Tribe. The money was promised in a bill passed last year and signed by President Barack Obama. Since then, the EPA rejected more than $20 million in reimbursement requests. Idaho's Nez Perce tribe is hoping to revive once plentiful salmon populations. The tribe organized a conference over the weekend that confronted the role dams pose in depleting salmon stocks that are historically important to the tribe. Emily Schwing reports.
The Northwest used to be home to some of the world's largest salmon runs. Mary Jane Miles is the chairman of Idaho's Nez Perce tribe.
The resiliency of the salmon is so beautiful that I liken the Native American to the salmon story.
She spoke at a panel discussion hosted by NAMIPU, Protecting the Environment. That's a tribal group advocating for the environment. They highlighted the impact of four federal dams on salmon runs in the Lower Snake River. According to NAMIPU, the federal government has invested more than $15 billion on salmon recovery without success. The group says dam removal is necessary to restore the salmon population under sovereign rights outlined in a treaty signed in 1855 between the Nez Perce and the U.S. government. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
South Dakota's highest peak was renamed last year to honor a Lakota Sioux leader rather than a 19th century U.S. Army general. As Jim Kent reports, hundreds of Native Americans gathered at the newly renamed Black Elk Peak for the traditional Lakota Spring Ceremony last week.
The Lakota have gathered at Black Elk Peak for generations to celebrate the return of spring. Russell Eagle Bear is the historic preservation officer for the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. He says the Welcome Back to Thunders ceremony acknowledges the rains that nurture the growth of life.
To come back into our territory, into our country in a good way, to bring forth good things, you know, fill up the lakes and rivers and creeks in a good way, to bring forth that growth, that water, water of life.
Eagle Bear says this year's ceremony is special because the mountain that was once named after U.S. Army General William S. Harney is now named after Lakota leader Black Elk.
Which is really significant for us, too. You know, it's kind of a blessing. There's a whole history about General Harney, and, you know, it's kind of a sore spot for our people, especially what happened at the Blue Water.
U.S. troops under Harney's command massacred Lakota people in 1855 at Nebraska's Blue Water Creek. That incident led descendants of Harney and the Lakota to push for the name change of the peak, which was approved last year by the U.S. Board on Geographic Names. Russell Eagle Bear says the renaming of Black Elk Peak should encourage tribes across the country to pursue changing the designation of geographic sites to traditional names. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. You can tell President Trump to honor tribes and protect Bears Ears at protectbearsears.org.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 20th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now, we're going to be talking about the pancake breakfast, which is a week from Monday. And I have with me Alan Akiyama. He's on the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you for having us on this afternoon, Scott.
Uh-huh. And we also have Charlene Miller. She is the coordinator for Meals on Wheels. Welcome to the show, Charlene.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, nice to have you both here. All right. So we have the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council and Meals on Wheels collaborating for this pancake breakfast. Alan, how many years have you been doing this pancake breakfast?
We've been doing it for so long. It's become a tradition now in Juno. We usually do these twice a year, on Sewers Day in March, and again on Alaska Day in October. And this year is going to be next Monday, March 27th, at the Juno Senior Center, which is located at 12th and Egan Drive, from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And the tickets are $13 in advance, $15 at the door for adults, $7 for children 7 to 12, and 6 and under free. And we're going to serve a hearty breakfast next Monday, pancakes, eggs, sausage, tea, coffee, and juice. And all the money that we raise from the pancake breakfast goes to the Senior Nutrition Program here in Juno.
The Senior Nutrition Program. Tell us about that and what all it supports.
Well, the Senior Nutrition Program, which is under the umbrella of Catholic Community Services, provides Meals on Wheels to shut-ins 5 days a week here in Juno, and also helps provide meals at the Senior Center 5 days a week, Monday through Fridays at the Senior Center, and twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, at the Douglas Methodist Church.
Okay.
As well as Bridge, Monday through Friday.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Part of that is Meals on Wheels. Charlene, tell us about the scope of Meals on Wheels here in Juno.
Well, here in Juno, Meals on Wheels delivers a meal 5 days a week to seniors who are homebound and can't get out and shop or cook for themselves. And then we also serve the meals, as Al said, down at the Senior Center Monday through Friday. So people are welcome to come down for that. We're kind of, Meals on Wheels, we're more than just, you know, serving meals, too. We go by and we check on people every day, see kind of a welfare check to drop in and say hi and just make sure that people are getting the food that they need.
Sure.
You know.
Take us through the day in the life of one of your volunteers. Where does it start? Where do they get the food? And then they have a route. How does all that work?
Okay, my volunteers, most of them volunteer once a week, and it's only for an hour a day. And they come in about noon and pick up their meals between 11:30 and noon.
And where do they get those?
Down at the Senior Center, or if you're in the Valley, we actually drop them off out at St. Paul's Catholic Church. And the routes are right around an hour, plus or minus, depending on what route that you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And about how many stops might your average volunteer make?
On average, I'm going to say 8.
Okay.
You know, some routes are up to 10, some are down to 7. We have one route that's just one person a day, but, you know.
And so, like you said, they bring food, but they're also checking in.
They are,
yeah. A little bit of company in the middle of the day.
And I used to volunteer for Meals on Wheels, so you get to know your clients, the people that you're bringing the food to. And, you know, you come in, you say hi, and have a little bit of, you know, talk to them a little bit, and just see how things are going. And I think people appreciate that.
I bet. And you said the food is prepared at the Senior Center, where the pancake breakfast will be?
Correct, yep.
And what are some of those meals like?
Well, today we just had... Goodness, what did we have today?
What's one of your favorites?
Oh, I am going to say the corn chowder and grilled cheese sandwich. Tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwich. But we do lasagna, and we have Swedish meatballs and enchiladas, and it's a pretty varied menu. And if you can't eat beef or you can't eat chicken or you have an allergy, we can, you know, make sure that you get a substitute for that.
And next Monday's pancake breakfast goes towards food costs, among other things?
It does. It goes to Catholic Community Services.
Okay.
So that will help cover buying food to serve Meals on Wheels, and also there at the senior center. And we also get a lot of food. We go out to the food bank almost every day to see if we can get meat or bread or milk from there. Meals on Wheels is really on a budget.
I bet.
You know.
Okay.
So this the pancake feeds really help bring in some money.
Besides going to the pancake breakfast a week from today, you might need some more volunteers?
I do, yes. If you have an hour to spare, just one day a week, you could come in and do a route. We're looking for people right now. So even if you just want to sub, too. So if you could just get a hold of me at 463-6179. Again, that number is 463-6179. And let me know. You don't even have to drive every day. If you just want to be a sub for when a driver is gone, that'd be great.
Okay, so we need a car and a license and an hour a day.
Exactly.
Or a week. Or
an hour a week. I won't make you work an hour a day.
Alan, being that you're on the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council, what else is on your radar right now as a council?
Well, this fall we're going to have our third annual Senior Center fundraising raffle. We've already put together the prize list. And we're going to start selling tickets this fall, probably in September. And also, of course, we're going to do the Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast fundraiser in October. We're also thinking about maybe doing an ice cream social this summer, maybe over Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. So, again, all the money that we raise from these fundraisers goes to the Senior Nutrition Program here in Juno.
Okay. You know, I know some people go to various senior homes around town, like musicians will play music. Some mm-hmm. people volunteer. What are other things our listeners or our community members can be doing to help support our senior population?
Well, on the Senior Center Council, we have some openings. So if anybody's interested in helping with our cause, we meet once a month, the second Friday of every month, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. at the Senior Center. So if you're interested, just come on down. Sit in on one of the meetings, see if it may be interest you, and you can join and help us out.
Okay. And to learn more, they should probably go get some pancakes a week from today, and they could talk to you right there as well.
I'll be there working in the kitchen. That's correct.
Again, that's from 9 to 11:30 a week from today.
That's correct.
At the Juno Senior Center on 12th, right next to Harborview Elementary. Is that a good way to describe it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Come on down for a good breakfast and visit with your friends, and we'll have Dale Wygant there playing some good music. So come on down. Have a good morning. Start your morning.
And if you want to volunteer for Meals on Wheels, call Charlene at 463-6179. Great talking with you both. We'll see you at Pancakes on Monday. Anything else either of you would like to add?
Thank you very much for having us on the program. We hope to see the community there next Monday.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Grandma's hand clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast, might fall on a piece of glass, might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand, Grandma's hand soothe the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand used to lift her face and tell her, she'd say, baby, Grandma understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, Grandma's hands. Grandma's hand used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand picked me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand, boy, they really came in a handy. She'd say, Matty, don't you whip that boy. What you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core, but I don't have Grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for Grandma's hand.
This week's Friday Fireside Chat at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center is the final presentation of the 2017 season. Historian and architect Wayne Jensen will commemorate the 150th anniversary of Alaska's purchase from Russia. Join the Forest Service for this free lecture on March 24th at 6:30 p.m. or at 8 p.m. Please use the stairs or outdoor ramp because the elevators are closed for construction. Call 789-0097 for details. Come on out and love your glacier.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 20th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 17 minutes after the hour. And in the studio now are two farmers. I hope I'm labeling you two right. It's Eli Ray and Kylie Ray, and they're here to tell us about Panhandle Produce. Welcome to the show, Eli and Kylie.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Okay, so Panhandle Produce, who wants to tell me how it came to be?
Okay, so we came to be when we realized that our community has a lack of fresh produce. I mean, we were both born and raised here in Juneau, and neither of us had tasted a fresh vegetable until we grew them ourselves. And we were fortunate in that we had the opportunity to work for Glacier Gardens, a local commercial nursery here in town, and had the option to use some of that growing space to kind of form our craft, and that was really valuable. So,
okay, excellent. I saw your video. So you have a Kickstarter campaign right now. You're working to raise money to open your own operation. You want to tell us about that?
We're hoping to raise enough money to put a lease down on an indoor grow space that would function as an indoor grow space to provide microgreens, leafy greens, and herbs to the stores around Juneau, and then also to open up like a small storefront to let other farmers and growers sell their crops with us as well.
Mm-hmm. Besides loving to do it, which it seems like you both do, you're also concerned about food security, right?
Very much so. I mean, we rely on shipping containers, shipping all of our produce up here, and it's a huge security risk that we have. Say the shipping goes out, all of a sudden we only have 3 to 5 days supply of food in any given time here, and it's that could be really dangerous.
And the hydroponic movement, tell me, I'm sure you're up to date on it more than I am, but it seems like it's a thing. Like, cities are doing it down south. I know people are doing it up here to a certain degree. How is it becoming more accessible and easier to do with technology?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's for northern climates like ourselves, it's perfect because you can use an existing indoor warehouse, and you can use racks and stack your plants vertically with lights, and it recycles the water so that you're not having to constantly water things like you would by hand.
And we have plenty of that.
Yes, not like we need to worry about that.
Do you have a physical location scoped out?
We actually are hoping to open up our location right along the road to Costco.
So okay.
Anka there, I want to say.
Currently, it's like our one-car garage in this time of year, so not a lot of growing space,
no.
You can imagine.
In your Kickstarter video, I saw that you were growing basil.
Yes.
What are some other things that you would like to grow?
We're going to focus a lot on microgreens. So there's a lot of different mixes, a lot of brassicas, which are cabbages, like kale, broccoli, and then also probably a chard mix, so like a, you know, like a Swiss chard kind of a mix.
Excellent. Okay, so the grow operation will be there by Costco. Will your storefront be there as well?
Yeah, it'll be a half and half. It'll be very, very advertised and very visible, too. Yeah, so we would put the main front right in front of the windows would be available for people to come walk in and talk with us about growing or look at the different products other farmers have made around town and then the back half would be just for growing.
Okay. And what kind of business are you planning on it? Is it going to be a nonprofit or for-profit?
Well, we're kind of a – there's this – it's a for-profit with our individual status, but what we aim to do is be a very collaborative business so that we can extend the same venue to other growers like ourselves who have been regulars of the farmers market circuit in town. And just Alaska-made products are the types of things that we want to be able to give a storefront to be sold to the general public.
Also, we really want to encourage other growers in town and other people who are aspiring to farm, mm-hmm. people to use the space that they have to grow their own food because, I mean, we have so much garden space here, and I have a lot of people approach me to use the space, but I'd really like to get them to use their own space as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, really tough question. Is a vine-ripened tomato in our future in Juneau?
Definitely. It needs to be, really. I mean, we'll start out with leafy greens, and as long as there's enough interest there, we definitely plan on expanding to a full farm property and being able to grow tomatoes year-round.
All right. And to get this all going or keep it going, Kickstarter, describe your campaign. How's it going so far and when's it end and all that stuff?
Okay, so great question. So we are currently in the middle of our Kickstarter campaign. We are trying to raise those funds to help jumpstart our ability to secure this spot and then bring increased food security. Of course, there's currently like 5% of our produce that we grow or now, whereas it used to be 55% in 1955. And so we want to change that. We want to bring other people into this movement. It's a lot larger than just us as individual growers. And the Kickstarter is part of that. So we're about 15 days in. And so we're falling a little behind. We definitely can't do it ourselves. It, you know, it takes a village, as they say. And so what we really need, and hopefully our if it resonates with other people like ourselves, hopefully what we can get is people to take that opportunity to go to our website. We have a website called panhandleproduce.com. You can get access to the Kickstarter page through that. You can also go on Facebook and search for our page on there. That is at Juneau Veggies, all one word. And then the Kickstarter page itself, if you wanted to go to their website, kickstarter.com, you can find us by searching for Panhandle Produce, and then you'll be able to pull up our project, watch the video, read a little bit about ourselves and what, you know, the mission, and then you can make a contribution of any dollar amount.
Okay. Beyond contributions, is there anything else the community can do to help support you two and this project? Is there anything you need?
I mean, looking for us at the markets around town are a big one. We attend the second Saturday markets over at the Airport Shopping Center. And starting here in June, the Orsies will join us, and there's going to be a lot of produce to be sold and to be eaten here in Juneau.
And the second Saturday market, you call it?
Yes.
That's happening right now?
It happens every second Saturday all throughout the year.
Tell us more about that.
Oh, yeah. It's at the Airport Shopping Center. Runs from about 10 to 3. There's a lot of vendors there. Typically, we try to get as many produce vendors there as possible, but there's very few produce vendors here. So there's a lot of handmade goods, a lot of people like that make candles, lotions, things like that, like artisan crafter market kind of a thing.
And is that the mall by Donna's?
Yes. It's like right on your way to the airport there. And we're going to be trying to get a lot more signs out along the road, especially during the summertime when we have all these produce vendors that, you know, to let people know there's fresh produce here, you can come get it.
When does the Kickstarter campaign, do they have an end?
It does. That is the scary part for those of us who have never tried out crowdfunding. It is an all-or-nothing campaign. Granted, the mission's important enough that we're going to press onward regardless, but we would like to see our goal funded. We have until April 4th at 10 p.m.
Okay, so today's the 20th.
Box ticket.
About 15 days. Yeah. And I think, did you mention you're going for about $15,000?
Yep. And we've already got
halfway there?
Six, I think. So we're doing okay. I definitely want to communicate to people who have already backed us that we are so grateful for their support. We want to give back to our community, and I think that's the other aspect of what we're trying to do. It's not just about anyone business, but also just increasing food security, which is a huge issue that impacts everyone.
When I on the Kickstarter campaign, did I see that there are like gifts that
people
get? Yeah,
there's incentive packages. So we actually teamed up with Aurora Project and got them to print some hoodies. I'm got some hoodies.
Wearing one right now.
And we got some t-shirts as well. And then, so there's a few different items around. We got some hats, water bottles, stickers. I mean, there's quite a few things to pick from.
All right. Again, you can go to panhandleproduce.com. Find them on Facebook at Juno Veggies, or I searched for you at Kickstarter.com. I just searched for Panhandle Produce, and I found your Kickstarter campaign right away. Wow. Good luck, you two.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for having us on.
Anytime. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to grow food for Juno.
All right. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
Crop from dawn to dusk. His face was red and his hands were wrinkled, but I dreamed of the day I'd join him on the water, harvesting that green and slimy crop. Now my hair is long, my beard untrimmed, crop is getting thin, water's getting warmer. I'm a hippie kelp farmer, I'm a hippie kelp farmer. Now my mama always told me to get a job in the city, but I want to make my living on the sea. So I spend my days out on the water, harvesting that green and slimy crop. Now my hair is long, my beard untrimmed, ripe is getting thin, water's getting warmer. I'm a hippie kelp farmer, I'm a hippie kelp farmer. Is broke and my boat is sold. Grandma is dead and I'm living in the city. But I dream of the days I spent on the water, harvesting that green and slimy crop. Now my hair is long, my beard untrimmed, ripe is getting thin, water's getting warmer. I'm a hippie kelp farmer, I'm a hippie kelp farmer. Now my hair is long, my beard untrimmed, crop is getting thin, water's getting warmer. I'm a hippie kelp farmer, I'm a hippie kelp farmer, I'm a hippie kelp farmer.
As a KTO listener, you expect to hear smart conversations about important issues every time you turn on the radio. We bring you facts and analysis, not partisanship or hype, so you can form your own opinions on the news. You count on KTOO for informed, insightful reporting. Don't take coverage like this for granted. It's here for you, thanks to the generous financial support of our listeners. We're raising the funds right now that make KTOO possible. Be part of the effort at ktoo.org.
You are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 20th, 2017. It's right at the bottom of the hour. And in the studio now is arts, culture, and music producer Annie Bartholomew and KXLL director and musician. Annie Be Good is the name of your band. How would you describe this incarnation of your music?
It's myself, but more acoustic focused. Mostly playing solo, but this time I have really awesome guitarist Jacob Picard, who's going to be accompanying me. So in Fairbanks up north, I usually play a lot of loud rock and roll shows with a full band, and this is taking it down a notch, doing it in the daylight, kind of traditional blues and country numbers.
It's this Friday at Kindred Post, right? Mm-hmm. What time?
Doors open at 6:30, shows at 7.
And this is the Tiny Post Office Concert number 12, right?
Yeah, I was hoping for number 13. I was like, come on, Christy, can't you squeeze something in?
So wait, music starts at 6:30 or doors are at 6:30?
Doors are at 6:30,
music
and they get
7.
Pretty packed, I've been told. But I don't know how packed it's going to get on Friday.
Oh, I'm sure it will be packed lying down the street.
A serious hunk guitarist, so it's going to be the Dan Kirkwood effect.
So I have a track. Tell us about what we have queued up here. We'll play a little for our listeners. What do you got?
Yeah, this is one of the unmixed demos from the recordings I've been doing at Studio A. The EP that I'm putting out, only making 50 copies, is kind of a snapshot in time of where I've been the last year preparing for Folk Alliance in Kansas City, Missouri. So I've been learning a lot of traditionals and really getting into like the American songbook of the Gulf Coast. So this is CC Rider.
CC Rider, see what you have done. CC Rider, see what you have done. Lordy, Lordy, see what you have done. You made me love you, and now your gale has come. Oh, Cece, Cece Rider, where'd you sleep last night? Cece Rider, where'd you sleep last night? Your shoes unbuttoned, your clothes don't fit you right, and you didn't come home until the morning light. Oh, Cece, gonna buy me a shotgun long as I am tall. Bring me my shotgun long as I am tall. Kill my man, now catch a cannonball. Oh, 'cause if he won't have me, he won't have no gal at all. And I shot him.
All right.
Pretty raw guitar solo from Jacob Picard in there.
Sounds good. Okay, so you mentioned the American Songbook earlier. Sort of maybe... How did you come to find CC Rider as an example of your music?
Well, my buddies were going to Kansas City for this thing called Folk Alliance, which is a lot like Folk Fest, but more industry-driven. And I put my name out there as someone who was willing to play a showcase, and someone said, we really want you to play this traditional room. Can you play more blues songs like Mamie Smith, Lucille Bogan, Bessie Smith, any of the Smith sisters, basically, you're in. And so I really had to look at Bessie Smith's music and think, like, what is she doing? And she played that song. A lot of other people have played that song. And just listen to their music and all the different versions. Because when we were talking before, you said there's another version of CC Rider where, you know, it's more complimentary. It's more a beat rather than the style like Laverne Baker does, where, you know, it's vengeful. So I always like the darker versions, the troubled versions. So I wanted to do that way.
And you're raised in Juneau, right?
Totally.
And tell us about your sort of musical upbringing in this town. It's interesting. I know, you know, Folk Fest has part, you know, to do with it. Bluegrass camps, right?
Yeah, my mom sent me to bluegrass camp when I was 11, and I hated it. I thought it was all like country music. I cried. Jason Norris from Barefoot made me cry. He like singled me out because I didn't know all the like bluegrassy songs. And but you know, just kind of stuck with it. And I love playing guitar. And after a while, you learn that like bluegrass is just one component of American music. And within bluegrass, there's all these other old time traditions, and it all kind of weaves together, which is really cool in Kansas to meet all these people who have that same kind of love for this music.
What else was influential in your formation as a musician?
going up to Fairbanks, being in a place where you can play a lot of shows that really facilitates people playing on stage. They don't get a lot of touring artists there, so it's kind of bands every single weekend, every single bar. So you get a lot of stage time and time to refine and kind of figure out where you want to take your voice. And so my music's really raw, and I don't always hit the right notes, but I kind of love that about it because, you know, life isn't this perfect recording. You don't get to take three or four times to nail it, so why not include the parts that are darker, the wrong notes? Not technically perfect. I mean, there's plenty of people who can do that. I'm just not there yet.
So you're going to start at about 7 this Friday at Kindred Post. About how long do you think you'll play?
Jacob's probably going to do a 20-minute set. We'll take a little break, and then me and him will do something together for 30 or 40 minutes.
Got it. And what's the stuff that he does solo like?
He, like, loves Jack White. I love Jack White. We're doing a Jack White set at Folk Fest together, so we've been kind of rehearsing for that in tandem with this. But he'll do probably some originals and some stuff that's, like, truly inspired by the White Stripes, Raconteurs. And he has a lot of pedals and microphones and gadgets, and you should check it out.
And remind me, is there a cost for tiny post office concerts, or maybe there's a donation?
I encourage donation, but we'll take anybody.
Annie B. Good. This Friday at Kindred Post, doors at 6:30, show starts at 7. Thanks for coming on the show. Annie, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'm only making 50 copies of the EP, so if you want one, I don't know what's going to happen.
When will those be available?
Just at the show.
Just this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
50 copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep.
Okay.
It's not going on the internet.
Really? Wow.
It's old school. We've got these things called compact discs.
Uh-huh. How did the... What?
You buy this thing called a CD player. You can't scratch them.
Annie B. Good, this Friday, Kindred Post, 6:30, limited EP release.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Annie.
See right off, see what you have done. See right off, see what you have done. Lordy, Lordy, see what you have done. You made me love you, and now your gale has come. Oh, Cece. Cece Ryder, where did you sleep last night? Cece Ryder, where did you sleep last night? Your shoes unbuttoned, your clothes don't fit you right. And you didn't come home until the morning light. Oh, Cece, gonna buy me a shotgun, long as I am tall. Bring me my shotgun, long as I am tall. Kill my men, now catch a cannonball. Oh, 'cause if he won't have me, he won't have no gal at all. And I shot him. Baby, won't be back till fall. Going south, babe, won't be effective foul. Lord knows that I won't be back there foul. And if I find be a good man, and I won't be back at all. See right off, see what you have done. See Ryder, see what you have done. Lordy, Lordy, see what you have done. You made me love you. Now your gale has come.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 20th. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 20th of March, 2017. First day of spring, the vernal equinox, the north and south poles equally distant from the sun, so we have almost exactly the same amount of daytime as nighttime. It was on this day, 1916, Albert Einstein published his theory of general relativity, a principle important to know. For example, GPS satellites need to take into account imperceptible changes in time described by relativity, just a few microseconds due to their high speed. If they didn't do it, they would be off in their distance calculations by several miles after only a day. Einstein was asked once what he would have done if his theory of general relativity had not held up. He said, "Then I would have been sorry for the dear Lord, because the theory is correct." It's the birthday of the psychologist B.F. Skinner, Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, 1904, leading exponent of the school of psychology known as behaviorism. He was the one who invented the famous Skinner box, in which a rat learns to press a lever in order to obtain food. It's the birthday of the Roman poet Ovid, born east of Rome in 43 B.C., author of the Metamorphoses, came out in A.D. 8, 12,000 lines, series of Greek and Roman myths of transformation. Dante, Chaucer, Shakespeare, Goethe, all were admirers of his. It's the birthday of Henrik Ibsen, born in Skien, Norway, 1828, when he was a young man, he met Ole Bull, the violinist, who was also the manager of the theater there in Bergen, and he hired Ibsen to learn about theater from the inside. James Joyce was such an admirer of Ibsen that he learned Danish just so he could read the plays in their original language, and he wrote to Ibsen and said, "I'm a young Irishman, 18 years old, and the words of Ibsen I shall keep in my heart all my life." Here's a poem for today by Kim Dower, Room Service English Muffins. If you've ever had one, you know what I'm saying. Soggy with steam, too much butter soaking into the crevices. At first you're mad, you told them butter on the side, but then you're grateful to have it. Day after day you eat it dry, now away alone on business in your overheated hotel room. You're grateful for the butter, indebted to strangers wearing hairnets in a distant kitchen for slathering your muffins, tucking them into a cloth napkin placed in a mesh basket, variety of colorful jams for you to choose. It's enough joy just to take that first bite. If you're lucky, it's still warm, even after the long elevator ride. If you're lucky, There's a yellow single-stem rose in a bud vase, shiny silverware poking out of the starched white napkin. Why give me a fork, you think? You ordered coffee and a muffin. Why complicate it with a fork? And then you spot the tiny salt and pepper shakers in the shadow of the napkin, and you wonder, does anyone, no matter how troubled, put salt and pepper on their English muffins? Maybe, maybe, when they're far from home. A poem by Kim Dower, Room Service, English Muffins, from Air Kissing on Mars, published by Red Hen Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, the 20th of March. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. We have a little extra time on the show today, so I queued up a story from the March Mudrooms. Here is Houston Laws telling a story, and the theme for this month's Mudrooms was Rude Awakenings.
Our next speaker tonight is Houston Laws. Houston is an ultra-marathon runner who has completed 600-mile races in Alaska, the sixth running the Klondike solo. He ran his own business running other people's dogs out in remote areas of Juneau. Please welcome Houston to the stage.
Hi, my name is Houston, and I was the one who fell through Mendenhall Lake. Funny enough, I was taking a friend out for her first time to show her how safe the lake was. I like running a lot, and the Mendenhall Lake during the winter months are one of my favorite locations for winter and distance training. Days and nights, putting in 20 to 30 miles at a time. I'm comfortable with that area. I really like it. That day on Sunday, it's a clear blue sky. It's crisp, you know, air. People are bundled up. There's a lot of people out. I take my friend and we grab the dogs and we head out on the Mendenhall Glacier ice and following the same path that, you know, a herd of people are in front of us, following that same path straight to the glacier, to the face of the glacier. As we get closer, people are spreading out, taking photos and hiking around. We pass a young mother and her child, and we say hi, do a greeting, and keep walking. And 10 yards ahead of us is another lady dressed in a full parka outfit, and she is standing really still. I'm like petrified. And I was thinking, well, dogs are running around her, barking at her. I'm sure she's afraid of dogs, and I'm going to have to go wrangle them up. So I walk forward, and I feel water seeping into my shoes. And now that cold water is rising up my legs slowly. I look down, and I notice I'm on an ice slab the size of a coffee table, descending elevator speed into Mendenhall, you know, lagoon. And I feel so helpless. And all I can think of, how much this sucks. I have to balance on this slab of ice, or I can plunge right in and get lost underneath the ice. And I just have to ride this out. And I can feel, you know, everything getting numb. It's cold, and it sucks. So I get to the chest level, and I become buoyant, and I'm kind of relieved. Like, all right, well, this is, you know, I get a relief there for a second, and then instantly, I just sense of urgency and panic, kind of like stepping up here, just a second now. Very similar. Urgency, panic hits me, and I'm just like, I have to refocus. What's my next step? Is paddling to the edge of the ice. And so as I get to the edge of the ice, I get hit with the second thought of doom is, if the ice keeps breaking as I attempt to crawl out, am I going to, exhaust myself so much and get hypothermic and, it could be tragic to get, and I just can't get myself out. But I refocus, what's my next step? And that is to extend my arms out onto the ice, bring my chest up, flatten my body as best I can, and I roll out away from the ice. And relieved and embarrassed, I grab the dogs and I connect with my friend, and I'm like, we're ready to go. We're getting out of here. Like, I hope no one saw that because we're going. Like, I'm ready, I'm out. And I look, and the lady now in the parka is walking directly towards the thin ice hole that I just created. And I throw, I hand off the dogs to my friend, and I wave like I'm a traffic controller, and I'm yelling, stop, stop, yelling at her, and just waving my arms. And the mother behind me says, that's my mother, she doesn't speak English. And I was like, I'm so tired, and I'm cold, and now I feel so helpless, like, that was a language barrier, and experiencing that helplessness of, like, going through that water, and going in that ice, going through the, going in the ice, and then just seeing someone possibly do the same thing, and you have no control over it, I was just like, I yell at the mother, a young mother, and I said, tell her to stop. So there's a hole in front of her. And I realize also we're setting her up for failure because I'm waving like a welcome sign as she's walking towards me, towards the hole, and so I'm going to relocate. So I shuffle around the hole and kind of spot maybe a, more solid, stable pathway. And all I can do is just stand there, can't get any closer, with the risk of me falling in, but trying to extend my arm out as far as I can and just hoping our hands, make contact. And it did. We pulled each other, pulled her, in, gave her a big hug, and it felt good. It was nice. And I was asked what kind of lesson maybe I might have learned from it. And I said, well, I'm not going to not go to the glacier anymore. I'm going to go to the lake again. But I felt like, but what I felt is we get desensitized and we call, this is Juno's backyard and we love to adventure and challenge ourselves. But, our backyard is Alaska. It's different and it's potentially, it can take your life and it has taken friends' lives as well. It's risky. And I think having that appreciation, it may be a new location or maybe a regular visited spot, but it's still Alaska and it still should be respected. And every day should be considered, conditions change every day and that should be always respected. So thank you for your time.
That's Houston Laws speaking at the March 2017 Mudrooms event, Rude Awakenings. To hear that story again or a lot more stories like it, you can go to mudrooms.org.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. For more information, go to pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon, about 5 minutes, 4 minutes until the top of the hour.
This is Bird Note. Today marks the vernal equinox. Spring is arriving across the continent. The birds sing in the new season. Curious to know what those birds were? Find out on our website, birdnote.org.
Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for spring planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll find out about the Marie Drake Planetarium presentation for Tuesday about Tibet and the night sky. And we'll talk with Stu Robards from the Coast Guard Auxiliary about boating safety. Taking a look at the forecast, currently 38 degrees at the airport. And tonight's forecast calls for rain, possibly mixing with snow after 7 p.m., then gradually ending, low around 30. Chance of precip is 80% with little or no snow accumulation expected. And looking to tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 41. No call for precipitation. And on Wednesday, rain likely after 4 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 38. Chance of precip is 60%. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.